This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Oftentimes, it's assumed that the United States supports opposition candidates in all of these African elections. The absolute truth is, and I can't underline this strongly enough, that the United States has no candidates in any election.
That's U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Tibor Nagy in an interview at the U.N. General Assembly in New York. We'll have more on that interview coming up. Also, the U.N. warns escalating human rights violations will threaten the credibility of presidential elections in the DRC. Officials in Mali say at least 15 members of an ethnic Tuareg community died when armed men from a rival ethnic group attacked their compound. And the WHO warns a perfect storm could allow the Ebola outbreak in the DRC to spread. We'll have these stories and more all ahead on Africa News Tonight. The UN General Assembly continues its annual meeting today with addresses from a number of African leaders, including those from Ghana, Kenya, Angola, South Africa, Liberia, Zimbabwe, and Uganda. Yesterday, Paul Kagame, the Rwandan president and chair of the African Union, spoke about the economic and political progress made by Africa in recent years.
Earlier this year, the historic Continental Free Trade Area was signed, which was the culmination of decades of effort, and once enforced, Africa's place in the global economic and trade architecture will be redefined. Economies of scale and higher level of intra-African trade will help our continent attain the Sustainable Development Goals by 2030. The momentous developments in the Horn of Africa, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Djibouti, and even Somalia, are the most remarkable. The region's leaders deserve our full support as they set aside decades of mistrust and work toward a comprehensive settlement. However, there are other situations in Africa, notably the Central African Republic, Libya, the Sahel, and South Sudan, where serious problems remain unresolved despite so much potential.
Kagame urged the Security Council to continue monitoring political progress made in the Horn of Africa and to help end tensions in conflict areas across the continent. He also said the three African representatives at the Council would soon present a resolution asking delegates to reduce imbalances of power at the UN. Also today, President Donald Trump chairs a UN Security Council meeting focusing on Iran's influence in the Middle East and the non-proliferation of weapons and mass destruction. The meeting comes a day after he addressed the General Assembly and urged world leaders to isolate Iran, which he accused of spreading chaos across the Middle East and beyond. The United States' new top diplomat for Africa says recent changes in Zimbabwe and Angola serve as proof of what enlightened leadership can accomplish. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Tibor Nagy is the former ambassador to Ethiopia and Guinea. He's also held several diplomatic posts in southern and West Africa. Our colleague Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick sat down with him in New York to talk about the future of America's relationship with Africa. She began by asking him whether the U.S. is satisfied with developments in the DRC ahead of the elections there in December.
Oftentimes, it's assumed that the United States supports opposition candidates in all of these African elections. The absolute truth is, and I can't underline this strongly enough, that the United States has no candidates in any election. Our only candidate is always the process. As long as the process is fair, transparent, and the elections are credible. This is what we would like to see. I think this is what most of the international community would very much like to see, that the people of the DRC have a choice, a real choice, in electing their next leader.
Are you happy with what you're seeing so far?
Let me put it this way. I have gone from being pessimistic to being more agnostic. Oftentimes, unfortunately, people are focused on the day of the elections. And often the day of the elections go off fine, but the pre-electoral period is critically important to make sure that all eligible voters are allowed and have a chance to register. And, of course, in the post-electoral period as to how that unfolds and to make sure that the right person is inaugurated who was elected by the people.
Let's move now to Zimbabwe, where we have actually had an election, and we have seen the transfer of power from one individual to another, albeit within the same party. The United States, along with the international community, were instrumental in, really through international sanctions, isolating Robert Mugabe's Zimbabwe. It seems that change appears to be on the horizon. So what is the United States willing now to do to help rebuild Zimbabwe and help it reintegrate into the family of prosperous nations?
We sure hope that real change is on the horizon, because the fact is that Zimbabwe could be one of the stars of Africa. There's almost not a sector that Zimbabwe could not excel at. What is key now is real action. The legislation and sanctions against Zimbabwe are quite specific and also specific in what needs to be done to, again, open up that space. If these steps come into being, then I would become a huge cheerleader with the U.S. business sector to say, absolutely, you know, this has happened now, so look at Zimbabwe as a possibility for investment, because at the end of the day, it's not going to be any amount of international development assistance that will move a country from, you know, low-income developing to middle-income. It's going to be foreign direct investment. We see that over and over again, you know, throughout the world, because there's massive amounts of international capital looking for good places to invest. But for that, the business community needs transparency. They need to know that it's a corruption-free environment and that they can get a fair return on their investment.
Speaking of more change, almost sort of the same that we're seeing in Zimbabwe, another example of transfer of power from one individual to another within the same party in Angola. President Dos Santos actually handpicked João Lourenço, and he's been on a rather aggressive anti-corruption drive. Is there a pathfinder here? Is there a lesson for the rest of Africa?
Absolutely. And that shows you the difference, literally, that one leader can make, because the Angolans have taken some steps, you know, especially on the corruption front. And if investors are very sophisticated, especially those investors who are looking at developing markets like Africa. If the investors are beating down the door to go to a country, that is definitely a very positive signal. Whether it's a new leader who takes these steps or somebody who's been in the system for a long time, when they're taking proven positive steps, as has happened, Angola's one of the examples, then the business community responds immediately. You know, formalized organizations, whether it's a government or other large organizations, may take time. But for the business community, you know, responding quickly is their lifeblood. So it's a very good indication of the positive changes going on in Angola.
That was Ambassador Tibor Nagy, the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. He was speaking with VOA's Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick during the annual United Nations General Assembly events. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi used his address to the UN General Assembly to blame the organization for failing to solve major international conflicts. From Washington, reporter Mohammed El-Shanawi has the story.
Despite the efforts of the UN that the United States supports opposition, including South Sudan, in all of the Central African Republic, and
the absolute truth is,
Egyptian President Sisi said,
underline this strongly enough,
short of finding
the United States has no
candidates
in any election.
We are having some technical problems at the moment, and we'll just continue on with the show. A new study says South Sudan's civil war has caused the deaths of 382,000 people, far higher than previous estimates. The report from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine says that about half of the deaths resulted from violence, with the rest caused by increased risk of disease and reduced access to health care. The findings were based on statistical models that compared actual deaths with expected deaths based on census projections and previous collected mortality data. The war in South Sudan broke out in December 2013, 2.5 years after the country won independence from Sudan. And also, it is clear that the war has severely affected the health of the South Sudanese population and that the humanitarian response to the crisis has not been insufficient. Also, the U.S. State Department and U.S. Institute of Peace funded the study, and it published today. The conflict has displaced about 2 million people inside South Sudan and prompted another 2.5 million people to flee to neighboring countries. South Sudanese President Salva Kiir and Chief Rebel Leader Riek Machar recently signed a renewed peace accord in the latest attempt to stop the fighting and to stabilize the country. And again, we are still experiencing technical problems. While taking the gavel of the Security Council at the UN, U.S. President Donald Trump today devoted the bulk of his remarks on the theme of nonproliferation to the criticism of Iran. Labeling Iran the world's leading sponsor of terrorism, Trump claimed that Iran's aggression only increased after the 2015 nuclear deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Agreement. It was signed. The Trump administration withdrew from the deal earlier this year. Trump repeated his frequent assertion that the JCPOA, which was signed by his predecessor Barack Obama, was a horrible one-sided deal benefiting Iran. They needed cash, Trump said. We gave it to them, he says. Trump added that Iran, a regime with this track record, must never be allowed to possess a nuclear weapon, and warned that Washington will pursue even tougher sanctions against Tehran. Speaking immediately after Trump, French President Emmanuel Macron said there needs to be a long-term strategy to manage the Iran issue, and it cannot be done with just sanctions and containment. Macron added that all countries share the same objective of preventing Iran from obtaining nuclear weapons. In addition to controlling the spread of nuclear weapons, Trump, in his remarks on the stated theme of the Council's meeting, said, "We must never forget the risk posed by biological and chemical weapons." The U.S. president noted action he has taken to respond to Syria's use of chemical weapons against civilians during that country's protracted civil war, and he said, "The Syrian regime's butchery is enabled by Russia and Iran." But Trump expressed gratitude to Iran, Russia, and Syria for slowing attacks in Idlib, saying, "Get the terrorists, but I hope the restraint continues." Trump told the Security Council that many things are happening behind the scenes between the U.S. and North Korea as they pursue denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Trump predicted that very good news will be coming out of North Korea in the coming coming days and years. Earlier today, he said his administration is planning a second summit with, well, details will be announced soon. Okay, now we're going to go back to our story on Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. Well, he used his address to the UN General Assembly to blame the organization for failing to solve major international conflicts. From Washington, we have reporter Mohammed El-Shanawi with the story.
Despite the efforts of the UN in numerous conflicts, including South Sudan, the Central African Republic, and Mali, Egyptian President Sisi said it has fallen short of finding permanent settlements in those and other wars. He reminded the United Nations of the failure of last year's action plan on Libya. He said, now there must be a renewal of the commitment to a comprehensive political solution as set forth in the UN Action Plan if there is to be a halt to the loss of life, the depletion of Libya's resources, and move toward the reconstruction phase. President Sisi told the UN General Assembly that a crisis of such magnitude, whether in Libya or Syria or Yemen, requires comprehensive and not partial solutions. Sisi also called for the recognition of a Palestinian state. القضية الفلسطينية التي تقف دليلا على عجز النظام الدولي عن إيجاد الحل العادل. He said the Palestinian problem stands as a perfect example of the failure of the international system to find a just solution to the conflict based on international legitimacy that guarantees the establishment of a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital. He emphasized the importance of supporting the concept of the nation state to prevent the spread of terrorism, illegal immigration, and organized crime. Sisi said the Egyptian people have made tremendous effort to restore their state and chose the nation state as their vehicle to achieve their aspirations for development and dignity. Sisi called for the need to deal fairly with human rights, including economic, social, and cultural rights. However, some of the president's critics have pointed out what they described as violations of human rights in Egypt. Michael Hanna is a senior fellow at the Century Foundation in the U.S.
This is a regime that has arrested tens of thousands of people. We see this kind of political repression, which is very clearly a human rights violation. The legal system has become an important tool for repression and squelching the possibilities of any kind or form of dissent or opposition.
However, the Egyptian National Council for Human Rights denies reports of political detainees in Egypt. The council's head has said that all measures related to arresting and apprehending suspects are done through the general prosecution and the judicial system. Mohammed El-Shenawi, VOA News, Washington.
Joseph Kabila, the departing president of the DRC, yesterday promised at the UN General Assembly that his country's elections this year will be peaceful and fair. Well, today, however, the UN Human Rights Council warns escalating human rights violations and restrictions to civil and political rights call into question the credibility of the vote. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where the Rights Council held a special session on the situation in the DRC.
The United Nations report highlights alarming trends of violations and repressive measures against people's freedom of expression and peaceful assembly since June 2017. Just 3 months ahead of crucial presidential elections in the Democratic Republic of Congo, the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights notes a 35% increase in human rights violations. These are linked to restrictions of democratic space, half perpetrated by the police. The agency's director of field operations and technical cooperation, Georgette Gagnon, says demonstrations are being forcibly suppressed. She says opposition leaders, human rights defenders, journalists, and activists are being threatened and intimidated. She notes all these violations are occurring in a persistent climate of widespread impunity.
The essence of a democratic society resides in the ability of its citizens, irrespective of their political affiliation, to enjoy their rights and freedoms without fearing reprisals from the state. Respect for human rights is one of the cornerstones which will determine the credibility of these forthcoming elections.
Gagnon warns the human rights situation in the DRC is likely to worsen as the elections approach. She is calling on the government to reverse these worrying trends. DRC Minister of Human Rights Marie-Ange Mushabekwa-Likulia agrees her country must make more efforts to protect human rights. But she says much progress has been made. She says elections on December 23rd will be free, credible, transparent, and without outside interference, adding that restrictions on public protests were lifted for all political parties 3 months ago. She notes for the first time since the Democratic Republic of Congo gained its independence 58 years ago, the government will be democratically handing over power. She calls this a historic achievement. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Solomon Terawali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. This is James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America. Hello, Africa. This is James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.